The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
For NBC 5 News, your place.
8 minutes after 7, Jack Cashel will join me here in a couple of minutes here after the Hannity update. And we're going to talk about the biggest lie that was slid by those amazing CBS fact checkers last night at the vice presidential debate. And we'll have a couple of emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. centralpointfamilydentistry.com, great people. And while you wait, crowns available, talk to them, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Leslie writes me, Bill, I had to turn you off this morning. We need desperately to save our country and our world to win this election. And to turn on you and you being so negative is mind-boggling. J.D. Vance did amazing. Everyone I listen to agrees. And you are so rude and nitpicky and you make fun of Trump and you complain about him regularly and you know how you are helping our cause. You seem to be part of the problem. No one's perfect. We all have flaws. He has given us so much, or up so much for us to do this. We literally only have, 33 days, and you're talking people out of voting for him. I'm incredibly disappointed. Leslie, hey, I appreciate your writing, Leslie, but guess what? My job is not to lick the boot of the Republican candidates. My job is to analyze and give my opinion on something. When they do good things, I say it. When they do not so good things, I say it. And by the way, I did say J.D. Vance did incredibly well yesterday, but you aren't happy because I'm not licking his boot. There were a lot of missed opportunities last night, and I'm always going to tell you the truth about that. And, you know, when I start the show off by saying, hey, more than one Republican was probably wishing that maybe J.D. Vance was at that debate a couple of weeks ago. You trying to tell me that's not high praise for J.D. Vance? I thought J.D. did a great job overall. Linda, on the other hand, writes me, says, Bill, I'm very disappointed with Vance's performance. He did not bring up the many great achievements of President Trump. Trump did not go into office to get rich like Obama and Biden. For goodness sake, Donald Trump refused to take his salary. J.D. seemed to be trying to be Mr. Nice Guy. We Americans do not want to just get along with the evil Democrats, movie stars, and George Soros and his ilk. We conservative Americans want a president and a vice president that have a backbone, true leaders, not ones who want to be friends with all the corruption that is the so-called progressive and commies in power in our country and Washington. Linda, I appreciate your writing there, too. Linda, I would tend to think that you're a little too harsh on J.D. I thought J.D. did a credible job given the three-against-one kind of debate format. All right? And that's why I said you can't hate CBS News and those two bubbleheads that ran the debate last night. You can't hate them enough. All right? And so, but I'm going to tell you what I think. When they do something smart, great. When something's missed, I'm going to say that too. I'm not going to be a Hannity or a Lars or someone like that that's going to sit there and just lick the boot. I can't do that. It would drive me crazy to do that for you. And besides, I wouldn't believe it. And I will never not talk to you about something that I always talk to you about stuff I believe in, folks. All right? And you can disagree with me or agree too. Now, we'll have some open phones on this meet a little bit later, okay? 11 minutes after 7.
Drake's Paint and Supply, your only
7-0-KMED. Here's Bill Myers.
Quarter after 7, Jack Cashel joins me. Great author, one of my favorite writers. His latest is Ashley, the untold story of the women of January 6th. And Jack Cashel, you'll find him quite often on WorldNet Daily, WND.com. Jack, welcome back to the show. Great to have you on, as always.
And Bill, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be able to... This issue.
I'm glad that you were available. I was watching the debate last night, and Tim Walz ended up saying something, and I actually spat at the television. Fortunately, I was far enough away that it didn't hit the screen, okay? And it had to do with when they started getting into January 6th, all right? They start getting into January 6th, and I hear this whopper of a tale being told by Tim Walz about what happened with police officers. And I'm going to play this. And I said, I have got to talk to Jack Cashel about this because he will just blow this thing up. And here we go. This is what Walz said.
140 police officers were beaten at the Capitol that day, some with the American flag. Several later died. And it wasn't just in there. In Minnesota, a group gathered on the state Capitol grounds in St. Paul and said, we're marching to the governor's residence and there may be casualties. The only person there was my son and his dog, who was rushed out crying by state police.
Okay, so he was talking about what happened at the governor's mansion, et cetera. Fine, all right. That being said, though, this whole thing about police officers dying at January 6th is a total and bogus fabrication, is it not, Jack? Set it straight for people.
It is, and I had the same reaction you did, Bill, for the same reason. And here's exactly what he said. He said 140 police officers were beaten at the Capitol that day, some with American flags. Several later died. Now, this is not unlike what Kamala Harris had said. They're finessing it a little bit here.
Yeah.
She said in her debate, on that day, 140 law enforcement officers were injured, and some died. Well, none died. And this all traces back to probably the most ghoulish hoax in American political history. And it emerged on over really two-day period between the January 6th and January 8th. On January 7th, Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, he's a good guy, Trump supporter.
Oh, yeah.
Died of a series of strokes. And on January 8th, the New York Times ran an article, and they cited two law enforcement officials as their source. And they reported that, quote, pro-Trump rioters killed Sicknick with a fire extinguisher.
Mm-hmm.
And then they added this really chillingly fraudulent detail. This is a quote. With a bloody gash in his head, Mr. Sicknick was rushed to the hospital and placed on life support, right? Now, total lie. And it's a conscious lie. Because when you add a detail like this, gash in his head, bloody, it's as though they were an eyewitness to that. And that never happened. Now, to embellish this hoax, they had his ashes memorialized in the Capitol Rotunda, much as they had recently done for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right?
They made it sound as if he was, we're going to have this memorial for Brian Sicknick. And like I said, Sicknick was a great guy. There's nothing wrong with Sicknick.
Right.
But they implied the entire fraud was brought up as if he died on the field of battle, battling back those evil Trump supporters, which was not the case at all.
Right.
Multiple strokes that he had. I think it happened overnight that he ended up dying from that. Wasn't that the case?
And then what they did to sustain the hoax, they sat on the autopsy report, the medical examiner's office, very friendly medical examiner's office, D.C., sat on it for more than 100 days. If you remember, George Floyd's autopsy reports were out within a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they were only forced into reporting these by the Judicial Watch lawsuit. And in an interview with the Washington Post, they had to admit it, they have a new medical examiner, a guy named Diaz. He called it a, quote, natural death, meaning a disease alone causes death. And according to Diaz, Sicknick suffered no internal external injuries nor any allergic reaction to a chemical substance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now the Times knew long before this report came out, I believe in June or whatever, that Sicknick had not been killed by a fire extinguisher. So they run an article in February 2021, and now they're saying, they didn't say it was false, they just kind of finessed it. So now they're saying one police officer, Brian Sicknick, was killed, and investigators are increasingly focused on whether chemical irritants were a factor in his death, right? The chemical irritants, the great majority of them sprayed that day were sprayed by the Capitol Police. Many of them, much of it, wafted back in their faces. Of the 140 people injured, probably half of them were from friendly fire. And then, it's really kind of pathetic. I hate to say this, but my father's a cop, and I have a great respect for law enforcement. I defend them a lot, including Derek Chauvin, who is on the opposite end of this kind of treatment. But in the February article that led, with all the injuries that the Capitol Police suffered, here's the opening sentence, right? This was this terrible. It was like September 11th, Pearl mm-hmm. Harbor. Here's the opening sentence. One officer lost the tip of his right index finger. Now, that's unfortunate. I wouldn't like to lose the top of my index finger, right?
Yeah, no.
But that's the lead. And then the next incident they cite is of a policewoman standing behind one of those bicycle racks. The bicycle racks is pushed over, right? And then they quote the protester saying to the woman, "We don't. First of all, what are they doing having policewomen man these bicycle racks? That's crazy." He says to them, "We don't have to hurt you. Why are you standing in our way?" And then he helps her to her feet, right?
Huh.
These are insurrectionists? Come on. And those are the two lead injuries that the New York Times was able to muster up. The worst injury anyone suffered on the police side was the concussion.
Let me ask you, Jack, I'm always suspicious when I see this sort of stuff because, the major organs, the United States newspaper organs or the major media, they're all involved with government intelligence agencies. Would you agree with me first off on that?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
They've become open about it. They're not even shy about it anymore.
All right. Is there not a possibility that this lie about not only Sicknick, but of the other police officers that died in the wake of January 6th was a government psychological op? And they end up planting these kind of details through their sources with pliable news sources such as the Times.
Well, in this case, and this incident doesn't get the attention it deserves, but when the New York Times cites two law enforcement officials as the source of the Sicknick murder by fire extinguisher, we've established that someone in authority has created, concocted, packaged, and sold this false story. And who that is? Would it be the two law enforcement officials? Are they FBI? I don't think they're Capitol Police. I don't think the Capitol Police would do that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it'd be someone above them, a DOJ, CIA.
I would add now that at this point that when I saw that last night, Tim Walz talking about 140. Let me just play the bite again if you're just joining me. This is at last night's vice presidential candidates debate.
140 police officers were beaten at the Capitol that day. Some with the American flag, several later died. And it wasn't just in there.
Okay, so that was the basic of it. And so Sicknick died, of course, but that was from natural causes, a natural death. Even the New York Times did a fact check. I'm looking on the New York Times site, and they had mentioned that four other officers also died in the coming weeks, in the following weeks and months of suicide.
Right.
And so... what is the implication that because of what happened at J6 that they're considered on duty deaths? They weren't considered that way by the police departments where they worked. They were just suicides.
And that's grotesque. I mean, what they should be asking is why did these guys commit suicide?
Could it be that they're
embarrassed?
Could it be that they're feeling that badly that they don't see a republic left of the United States any longer, and they were part of it?
By the way, in. Having my father, my uncle, several of my cousins are cops, and Newark, New Jersey, where you do real police work, when I talked to my uncle about it, he was involved in the Newark riots in 67, and he worked 72 hours straight on the front lines, having Molotov cocktails thrown at him, bottles, bricks, and he served in Korea. He said it was worse than Korea. What happened on January 6th was a stroll in the park for a big city cop. How about a Minneapolis cop?
Mm-hmm.
They had their police station burned down.
Yeah.
Literally.
I know.
Right?
And
they were sent running through the street to escape the crowds. And then here's what happens, too, and this is really appalling, and it bothers me to read these reports, but in these cities where the riots were, if anyone was injured by the cops, they sued. Right?
Yeah.
And the people, there were four protesters died that day. Three of them were killed by police action. They're all caught on video. Ashley Babbitt was shot. Roseanne Boylan was smothered under a pile of that the police pushed down the top of her.
Yep.
And then beaten after she was pulled out from the pile. And Kevin Greeson had a flashbang go off in his face and suffered a heart attack. Died. By the way, I just want to add this one point. I've been watching presidential, vice presidential debates for a half century. No one ever did as well as J.D. Vance did last night.
I would agree. That was about as smooth and amazing a performance as it gets. However, that this lie that Walz just shot off there near the end of it didn't get challenged did concern me. And it does make me wonder if Republicans are so embarrassed about January 6th, they don't even want to try to defend it when the facts are in their favor.
Well, they're on message. And, you know, Vance is not in a position. Trump has, you know, Trump did mention Ashley Babbitt. I mean, he has more liberty to talk about this in his debate, who was killed by the police. And he challenged him. Vance were, you know, 10 minutes away from the end of the debate.
Yeah.
He knows he's mopped this guy up. He knows that who's ever left watching now are just political junkies, right? And his target audience are those undecided soccer mom types and whatever, you know, who, and you have to ask yourself at the end of the evening, if you were undecided and you were choosing based on who you'd want your vice president to be, it's a slam dunk. When I watch these debates, yeah, I wish they'd give a half hour to talk about January 6th so I could speak honestly about it. Mm. It's very frustrating. I have not heard anywhere a debate about what happened that day in the last 3.5 years. And I'd love to participate because I know.
I know.
And
I know you do. That's why I had you back on, Jack. All right. Hey, I'm a little short on time at this point, but I wanted to make sure and get your take on it. I knew that you were going to have a very strong opinion about this also, okay? It really was.
Yeah.
And you are going to be writing an article, and you're going to go down the whole path on WND.com. It'll probably be out tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it will be out tomorrow, and it's, you know, it's worth reading because I get into the whole background. I have the New York Times turn Sicknick into a martyr. Mm-hmm. And how they try to finesse their way out of it. They never own up to it. They never say, gosh, we were wrong. Sorry. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't in Tiananmen Square. You know, whatever.
Yeah, that was a beard, wasn't it? Jack Cashel, once again, in his latest book, well worth your read, Ashley, The Untold Story of the Women of January 6th. And I'll put that information on my blog post for today on this, too. Jack, thanks for taking a few minutes on this, okay? Thank you very much.
Hey, Bill, anytime. Happy to chip in.
Thanks. You bet. 729 KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is the Rogue Valley's spray-on bedliner leader for 20 years running. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
7:31, Tom's here. Tom, you wanted to weigh in. Last night's debate here. We'll give some people a chance to bite on that. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, I thought it was pretty even in terms of presentation and so forth. You've definitely pointed out some major flaws in the truth and the facts and so forth. But overall, I don't think either one made the fatal flaw like Biden did.
No.
But
And I would agree with you. And unfortunately, and I know you're going to hear a lot of Homer media today that's going to be talking about that J.D. Vance destroyed him. It's like, no, I don't think he did. I don't think he could have destroyed him, per se. You had three against one. You know, and I think that J.D., given the debate format and the fact that the two CBS people were in the tank, essentially shielded Walz from being destroyed. My opinion.
Yeah, and definitely Walz said a lot of things that could have been destroyed. I do think that Vance is too much of a nice guy. I think what the Democrats, there's a saying, who you are speaks louder than anything you can say. The Democrats are basically throwing the borders wide open, and they're pushing World War III in Ukraine. Those things are so loud that everything else pales in comparison. And I think Vance could have said, you know what Harris has done and Biden with the border is treason. I don't think that's an excessive word, treason, for what they've done.
$200 billion, by the way, $200 billion thrown into that country right now, and it doesn't get one mention last night or really any attention whatsoever.
Yeah, there's so much going on, but overall, Well, I guess we're just going to see what happens. But, yeah, I think the Democrat policies are so egregious and awful that they can't keep covering it up.
All right. Well, we'll see how this ends up going. There's still a few weeks to go, but I don't know. Could be right about that, Tom. Let me go to David. David's in the Bay Area. David, go ahead. I imagine you're probably disagreeing a bit here, but let's hear your take. Go ahead.
Well, I was actually spurred to call when I heard that earlier caller. Was that Jack, the guy that was on before the ads?
Jack Cashel? Yeah, Jack Cashel, the author. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded kind of creepy for a guy to be, like, giggling about people getting hurt and dying at the Capitol on January 6th. Is he, like, I mean, I'm from back in St. Louis where there were a lot of Klan, but there were a lot of Nazis. So
okay.
I couldn't quite figure his angle. You know?
Yeah, I can't. I think I kind of figure out your angle, too, there. And, all right, I get it. I got your angle, too. Appreciate the call, David. Got to go. Let me go to Wild Sam and Steve. Hello, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, Bill. You know, the thing that nobody talks about January 6th was it scared the crap out of the Washington insiders because they never see the consequences of their actions. And here are hundreds of thousands of people outside the Capitol complaining about what the Washington insiders had done. Now, I think you were completely right in saying that was a honeypot. The FBI had planted some provocateurs to cause some things to happen that would lead to this.
They wanted this to happen. And honestly, there were people I knew, some of them within party politics, and I'm just leaving names out of this. And they would call in. They would talk to me behind the scenes. And I said, don't go. It's not that I don't think, you know, it's like
I could
smell this coming, a trap from a mile away, from 20-something hundred miles away. And I didn't want to be right about that. All right. I hated being right about that. I would have loved to have been wrong.
I think you're right. I agree with you. But I think even the people they didn't understand how many people. There was a sea of people. And the people saw the provocateurs. Remember the one guy was beaten on a window and the crowd yelled, Fed.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. Okay, so they changed tactics in the middle of that. They knew that that wasn't going to work because there were so many people there protesting. So they opened up the Capitol and let everybody in there, and that was the honey trap. So,
yeah, we're walking into being invited by police to walk into the people's house was somehow turned into a felony, right?
But it still scared the people in power so much that there were that many folks there complaining about what they had done. They live in their own bubble. They didn't think that could happen. And all the stuff about battery cars, that's about keeping people from showing up there to complain, I honestly believe. Now, one other real quick point. Walsh said the lie about you can't yell a fire in a crowded theater. That's a misquote.
That's right.
What Oliver Wendell Holmes said was you cannot falsely yell fire in a crowded theater. And that was used as an argument for the sedition laws for a long time. And even Holmes finally recognized that there is no law, there is no rule that you can have against speech. The only remedy for bad speech is more speech.
Exactly. And thank you for making that, too. We got a gentleman on here. You wanted to differ on the Walls talk on China, right?
Yeah, I think you missed the point, Bill.
Okay, let me play a little bit of that end part so maybe I can find out how I'm screwed up.
The very end of it, yes.
Okay, the very end? Okay, let me play that, okay?
Do the best you can for your community, and then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Okay, so what did I miss there, you think? I really like to hear. Go ahead.
He learned a lot about what needed to be in governance. Now, if he learned a lot from the Chinese, how would he approach January 6th?
Yeah,
I don't think there would be a January 6th person alive today.
Yeah, that's a very interesting take on that.
And the tone of his voice, he was almost gloating about it. It just didn't sound like he knew what he would want to do.
You know what is interesting about this? I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be able to get. Yep. I have a CIA agent, a former CIA agent, who's going to join me tomorrow morning at 6:30. And we're going to be talking about just this issue with Walls, because Walls technically should not be able to get a government clearance, security clearance, because of what he has done with China. And a former CIA agent's going to be talking about why it truly shouldn't be on this ticket. So there may be more to that than even I thought. And thanks for making it, okay?
Well, there's one more on that, okay. Your CIA agent. There was a CIA thing I listened to one point where inflections and tone of voice sort of gives away what is really going on in a person's mind when they say something.
Mm-hmm. And what
That's
do you...
what triggered me when I heard you the first time you played that. I missed that yesterday.
Okay, all right. Hey, appreciate the call. Thanks for the thoughtfulness, all right? Seriously. All right. It's 7:39, and if you're on hold, I'm not going to be able to get to your calls right now. We will have some more open phones probably 8:30-ish or so. We have State Senator Linthicum. I want to get his reaction to what happened last night, and also the continuing slow motion car crash known as our voting system here that he's wanting to change as a Secretary of State candidate, and we'll talk with him here in the next few minutes. But yeah, tomorrow morning I am going to have this. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, I just I sent the request in here. It's Pedro Horta, and he's written a book called "The Broken Whistle: A Deep State Run Amok." And he's the executive producer and writer of Deep State Gangsters. And he's going down the rabbit hole of Tim Walz and that communist China experience. That's going to be 6:30 tomorrow morning. I think that will be quite stimulating as it is.
I'm Bill Payne, sending a shout out to Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. I would just like to say what an amazing experience.
100, extension 3 for more information.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Pacific Survey Supply, and I'm on KMED.
Quarter before 8, great bumper, digging in the dirt. We're doing that right now for sure. Hey, weren't you called the dirt road economist at one point, Senator Linthicum? How you doing this morning? Welcome back.
I am doing great, and I still am the dirt road economist. Just I spent more time writing about the rigmarole that's happening in the Oregon legislature than the beautiful part of the free economy that should be utilizing our resources with good stewardship. That's our calling.
Indeed, for sure. Well, you're running for Secretary of State, big deal. And this is a big deal because election integrity has still not really been given its due in the state of Oregon. And I know that we've talked the last couple of weeks about the exposure of more than 1,000 foreign nationals, some of them illegal aliens, that actually had the opportunity to vote. And I can't help but think that, once again, like you have called this a limited hangout, which is what the CIA would term it. Hey, we'll tell you a little bit of the truth, but kind of to put us to sleep, right? Put us to sleep. You don't need to change anything in the Secretary of State. You don't need to change anything about vote by mail or voter, right? You think there's a little bit of that going on right now, Senator? What's the latest?
Yeah, you know, the 1,200 or actually 1,300 and some odd, everybody pretends, oh, that's such a small percentage of the individuals who completed their application. And in truth, you know, the Oregon registration requirements are so lax, we have no idea. Online voter application has two questions that start off the questionnaire. The first is, are you a citizen of the United States of America? Yes or no. And the second is, will you be 18 years old on or before Election Day? Yes or no. And then there's a red box line that says, if you answer no in response to either of these, please don't complete this form. And so now it's pretty straightforward. It's a yes or no question. Are you going to be honest? Yeah. Are you going to be dishonest? Yeah.
Okay.
And then and in total, there were 425,000 convicted criminals that got led into the U.S. at the southern border. So in 50 states, that would be let's all round up just because we know there's a lot of, unaccounted. There's 500,000 convicted, quote, convicted criminals coming across the southern border. Put an equal number in each state, that'd be 10,000 in each state. 10,000.
Yeah, that's if we had, that's right, if we had criminal alien equity, right? That kind of thing. That's the way the Democrats would describe it, equity.
I'm wondering, do you expect these people, these individuals, be they, legitimate or not, do you expect these individuals to fill out an answer that question truthfully?
I would take it even further than that, Senator. Think about this, is that the very nature of these individuals being here is a crime. It's a federal crime just by nature of being here. Why would we expect truthful answers? Because I would imagine that many things that are done, if you're an illegal alien here, you're here maybe for a better life or whatever it is, or there's just not enough fentanyl in Jackson and Josephine and Klamath County, and so they want to do the jobs that Americans aren't available to do for that. Let's say I'm being sarcastic, okay?
Actually, you make a great point. Now there's 20 million criminals, most of whom have not yet been convicted of the crime of entering the United States without proper
authorization.
The other thing is Oregon's to register in Oregon, you have to have either a valid license, permit, or ID number. And if you don't have an Oregon-issued ID, which you could just get by going to the DMV, you can get just a picture ID that says, this is who I am. And I don't know how they validate that. I should actually research that. And this is the killer one, or four digits of your Social Security.
A Social Security number is what you told me, right? A valid Social Security number, not necessarily yours, right?
Well, actually, the bill that got enrolled changed it from a valid to the person's valid.
Oh, okay. I forgot that they had changed that. All right, never mind. I stand corrected.
Mm-hmm. So that got changed. But what can you do with, can you go to Lotto headquarters in Salem and say, give me my money. I got four out of the nine digits.
I know. I tell you, if you're elected as Secretary of State, if enough people see the light and realize that we don't need another partisan hack, Tobias Reed, did I say that out loud? As Secretary of State. Yet another Democratic operative to run the Democratic state election rules, which are always kind of jiggered in favor of the Democratic Party. You could actually have some reform and influence on actually having a fair, open, and accountable election system, could you not, as Secretary of State?
Yeah, and aside from these election integrity things and the voter roll that we're describing this morning, there's ballot titles for all the initiative process. There's the number of signatures required on this ballot measure, that ballot measure, the other ballot measure, who's on the committee to write the ballot measure title. All of these things are enormously impactful, and the Secretary of State runs all these issues. So when it comes to slamming home measure 117 or 118 or whatever, ranked choice voting, or the free money handout to every man, woman, and child that's been in Oregon for 200 days, these things should be extremely difficult to get into law, not easy to get into law. How in the world did we come to this place where anytime you want to change the Constitution, you can change it? And the Constitution's supposed to be the rule book. The Constitution's supposed to be the lines painted on the court in a basketball. environment. Think of it that way. There's
It's not supposed to be an etch-a-sketch. That's how I've termed it,
You flip it upside down.
Anybody remembers the classic toy, the etch-a-sketch you draw on the screen, and then when you want to erase it, you flip it upside down and say, democracy! And then, off we go. All right. All right, Dennis. So I know you're working really hard. You write a lot of things on this. And electdennis.com, people can find out everything about your candidacy. I wanted to shift it here for a minute here on one of the challenges that I have with even last night's debate. As good as J.D. Vance did, and I think he did a wonderful job of staying on message, especially in a three-on-one kind of situation, I still think there were some lost or some missed opportunities, and maybe that was just going to be a natural part of a flawed system. That being said, though, I continue to see Republicans fall in the trap time after time after time of agreeing. This is what Eric and I were talking about last hour, of never just disagreeing with the concept of some program, some entitlement, whether it's Obamacare, ACA, whatever it is. It's always having to agree with them, and they are caught flat with coming up with the reasons why the answer is no on these things, whether it's child care, expanding child care, and whether it's the Federal Reserve. Because, people are wondering, they're arguing last night about how much federal money should be going into child care. Do you remember that part of the debate last night?
Right. Yeah. And all of these things, these are all artificial solutions that are offered by government once government screws up the natural state of things, where people have values, they make choices, they live within their means. All of these kinds of things are what you would do in a natural economy. But now when the government throws a few pennies on the table, all of a sudden, everybody's pretty anxious to grab that nickel, that dime, those pennies.
Yeah, let me give an example of it. I have said and will continue to insist that when people talk about the Federal Reserve Bank, why are homes so expensive? Why is it that you can't have one person any longer working in most families to be able to support a family so that the other parent can take care of children? The natural order of things, right? That you can't do this. And so they were sitting around begging for shekels from the federal government for child care and Head Start and whatever else you want to call it. But when you have had essentially central banks in charge of the nation's currency, and all it does is inflate, all we're arguing is about how fast or how slowly it inflates. And the markets sit around there and say, well, we don't really have a market. What's the Federal Reserve going to do with the interest rate? And it's like both Democrats and Republicans ignore the obvious. It's right out there in their face. But they talk about how to fix the, with yet another interference, what was caused by interference and by government policy. That's it. They keep breaking our legs and handing us crutches.
That's right. And what all of these talking heads fail to see is that what these, quote, loans or whether it's down payment and a house.
Yeah,
or
yeah. Student, Kamala Harris is $25,000, right, for our house down payment.
But what this really is, it's a demand side subsidy. So this is increasing demand, but not solving the supply. So everybody's acting like, if I only give people $50,000 or $25,000, they'll just go out and buy the home of their dreams. That's not true. If contractors have been limited by all the zoning requirements, whether it's the zoning at the, urban growth boundary or it's, citywide zoning.
Oh, yeah. Oregon is huge on this. And of course, what's the latest? The latest interference coming out of the late Kate Brown as governor, that is, climate friendly, equitable community. Yet another restriction and NEBNOS on it. Everything about social engineering us. Everything, Dennis.
Yeah, and this is really a problem, because what you see happening is all of a sudden we are getting trapped into these problems where zoning runs the day, and And she came down hard on landlords. So everybody who was a landlord, if they had a single family home.
Heck, they've been selling out, haven't they? They've been selling out. They want to get out of that business.
So they withdraw their home or they sell it to the big corporate guys. And then somebody complains about the big corporate guys. And the Harris administration is now accusing them of gouging, or she's going to hold them accountable or whatever. But she's the one who is licking their boots and telling them to have a heyday in the marketplace. So all of these things, you know, just get bundled up and get misallocated to private industry when they're really government problems. The government has caused these problems.
Well, how can Republicans, you know, get on their toes rather than being flat footed, always playing this part of and as I will, you know, always term it, playing the part of the Washington generals, always having to agree and play with the Harlem Globetrotters as the Democrats, and always there just to make it look like we're resisting you, but ultimately helping the Globetrotters win every time.
Right, right. And this has really been quite recent. When all the GIs came home from World War II, government got into home building as a cure for all of these individuals who didn't have work anymore. They're out of the armed forces. They're coming home. Mm-hmm. They're going to their communities. What are they going to do? They're going to marry their high school sweetheart, and kids will be born, and the population will grow, and we don't have the workforce. All the workforce got pushed into building airplanes, tanks, and Jeeps, and now the government thought they could solve the problem by spurring housing as the solution. This housing as the solution led to, you know, the creation of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac.
The FHA, the FHA loan, all these interferences in the market, right? That's right. Okay.
Right. Right. So today, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHA, and the VA account for nearly 90% of all mortgages in the United States of America.
Isn't that amazing? We would normally call that a monopoly, and the Federal Trade Commission would be going out there and putting Fannie Mae out of business. Hmm.
Yeah, well, and we almost did that. Remember the 2007, 2008 you know, liquidity crisis, so-called, you know, was really the bad loan deal of the century based on President Clinton and George Bush regimes to increase lending in the subprime market.
Yeah, I remember that. That's what George Bush was pushing, too. So anyway, back to the Republicans. You know, how do you wise up the Republicans to have them stop playing the part of the Washington generals? Every time. It's like every time. It's done in Salem, too. Every time we've seen it. You know, we can't disagree with tampons in the boys' rooms because that would people would yell at us and be mean, so we have to vote for that. You know, that kind of stuff here, Dennis. I've had it.
Right.
Okay?
Right. It's just a bad understanding of economics. It was good to hear Eric Peters refer to the Mrs. argument where J.D. Vance referred to the pressure on, you know, fertilization rates or family size, demographic family size because of car seats.
Yeah.
We don't have room for kids because we can't fit another car seat into our car. And that sounds like a stretch, but it's not really, because what you and I do is we have values. Everybody does this. In fact, I'm just using you and I as the local, you know, instances. We make decisions. We have preferences. We have likes. We have dislikes. We have economic constraints.
In other words, we react rationally to all of these incentives or disincentives which are forced upon us, right?
Right.
Isn't that ultimately where? So I guess, though, are Republicans starting to wake up here? Will they figure this out? Or will they just continue to, will I have to reach across the aisle? Because if I were to disagree with Tim Walz on a debate stage, people might think I'm a big meanie. And by the way, yeah, Vance did a great job with what he had. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's hard. Economics is what everybody uses their own circumstances, and they also look for, you know, the money. The money that's coming from the Fed causes inflation. It's a direct cause. If you are, let me turn you into an illegal that's got a cash reward by being here or subsidies for being here, whether it's in food stamps or a credit card, it doesn't make any difference. Actually, same difference, I guess. But when you show up to buy tomatoes, you don't actually care what the price is because you've got this cash on hand. Now, when I show up to buy tomatoes,
you have to be careful of it on your own. But when, you know what the Haitians call that? Call the SNAP benefits? They call it the you know, the magic money. They call it magic money that shows up on the card each month. It's amazing, and it's just yet another sign of the corruption. So here it is. Dennis, I'm almost out of time here, okay? And I don't know how we're going to solve the Republican Party. I keep asking this one. It's probably an intractable problem. But could you invent a time machine, all right? Invent a time machine. I go back in time to prior to FDR's, you know, ascension to the presidency in the Great Depression, okay? So if I could just strangle him in the crib, okay, that's all it would take. All right.
Let me give.
I'm just having fun with you, okay? You work with me. All right.
No, that's fine. Here's the work. Let's take the time machine. In 1940, the average price was 2.1 times an annual salary.
That was what a house cost, average house,
that's
right?
That's what a house it was, 2.1, just almost two times your average salary.
So you made $2,000 a year, your house was $4,000, maybe $4,500 at best, right? That kind of thing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, housing prices have increased by 15,000% instead of $2,938 average in 1940. The average home today in the United States is $426,900.
Probably so, five or six times income, right?
Yeah. Well, easily, you know, and all of a sudden we think government can solve this problem. I want to know, where did these housing prices come from? And it doesn't.
Well, they came from government policy. They came from government policy, Dennis. You know that. That's where it came from.
Well, that's what I was asking the question for your listeners out there thinking about this. All and right. So, you know, if you begin to wonder about it, today it's 7.1 times average salary, seven times your salary instead of two times your salary. And this is directly because of government intervention. Government intervention is not the queen bee that we all thought it was. It's actually a death knell. Look at what government did with the COVID scheme. Look at what government is doing in the election process. Look at what government and Senator Wyden is trying to do with the Supreme Court.
Oh, that's right. He's introduced his Pack the Court bill. By the way, he doesn't have the votes right now, fortunately. But still, that's where they want to take it. It's about
more interference. And they want to deny your freedom of conscience, your free speech, your right to air a grievance. And if I get elected to the Secretary of State's office, the first thing I'll do is I will terminate that contract at the soonest available point, if not successfully terminate the contract because of a termination clause.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, you would get rid of the surveillance contract that the Secretary of State's office is now engaging in because of misinformation, meaning information that the state of Oregon disagrees with. All right. Dennis, that is a great place to wrap. We'll talk to you next time, and you be well. It's electdennis.com. electdennis.com. I hope people will read up more on what you're up to. And, we've got to stop. I guess we have to stop asking what government's going to do to fix this problem that government caused. I appreciate the call as always. You be well, okay? Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 6 minutes after 8, KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KPXG, Grants Pass. Captain Bill's going to be on here in a few minutes. I want to find out how clean and clear and how many fish are swimming in the Klamath River. Been a couple of weeks since I had a chance to ask him. And maybe we'll get the latest on that and your calls coming up. American Rancher Garage United.